heartbeat sped up. He pulled a white napkin out of his pocket and handed it to me. There was a phone number written on it. I swallowed my disappointment. "I already have your number," I said.
"Ha ha, that is Elliot's number. You're welcome."
"You still think you're some sort of matchmaker?"
"I'm an excellent matchmaker."
"Elliot gave me his number 6 months ago, but thanks anyway." I knew Elliot had been interested back then. I'd kind of blown him off, exchanging a few texts, but nothing more. I shoved the napkin back into Cooper's pocket, then walked ahead of him. The planks on the pier were warped, and I had to slow down once I got there so I didn't trip. Cooper caught up.
"Did you ever call him?"
"We texted a little." "I'm not interested, Cooper."
"Did you ever tell me about this?"
"I'm sure I did."
"Huh,"
he said. When we reached the end of the pier, I leaned against the wood railing and looked out into the water. At first glance, the ocean appeared black at night, but between the skyline and the shoreline, there were so many variations of color and movement that it always made me itch for a paintbrush.
"Talk to me, Abigail. I hate it when you get inside your head. What happened? You said Mr. Wallace was considering you. What did he really say?"
"That I have no heart."
"He said you were an android?"
I draped my arms on top of the railing and laid my forehead on them with a moan. The smell of salt and fish and seaweed overtook me. Cooper rubbed my back.
"He said you have no heart? What does that even mean?"
"He said I have no depth. That my paintings are basically one-dimensional. They don't make him feel anything."
"Oh, so he's an android. Got it."
I buried my head deeper in my arms.
"But seriously, he obviously doesn't know what he's talking about."
"But doesn't he?" I wanted to say. "You feel the same way. You're missing that piece when you look at me, too. The piece that makes you feel something." I turned my head sideways and looked at Cooper. I have an agoraphobic mom and a war zone dad, and I couldn't forget the unrequited love thing I had going on. How much deeper can a person get?
"Not much,"
Cooper chuckled, a sound that made my heart thump hard in my chest. I groaned again and reburied my head. Several waves crashed against the supports below before he spoke.
"Your mom isn't agoraphobic."
"I know, but it seems as though she's studying really hard to become one. She's getting worse."
"Worse how?"
"She used to at least go out, leave the house. I can't remember the last time she did that. She needs friends. That always seemed to help her before we moved here."
"I can probably get my mom to ask her out to lunch."
I didn't need to say anything. Just stared at him until he realized that was a ridiculous suggestion.
"You're right,"
he said.
"They aren't a good match."
"It's fine. She'll be fine when my dad gets home in August."
"Your dad gets home in August?"
I smiled at that thought. It was right around the corner. "Yes, I can't wait. But he'll miss the show. I mean, he would have missed the show. Now it doesn't matter."
"Maybe you misunderstood Mr. Wallace."
"Nope. He was straightforward. Very. He actually used all the words I told you. No emotion, no depth, no heart. All of them."
"That's harsh."
"It was harsh. Being an artist defined me. It was the one thing I felt I was good at. The one thing I thought people, and Cooper, admired me for. And now I didn't even have that." The tears I'd managed to control at the restaurant threatened to spill down my face.
"It's just one person's opinion, Abby."
"He has a doctorate in art. He is a museum curator. And he's the only person close that can show my art. I needed this experience." The lump in my throat was growing by the second, and I kept having to swallow it down.
What about another museum or gallery?
I've been looking. It's a long shot. Hundreds of people apply for shows. I thought I had an in with Mr. Wallace. But if he doesn't like my art, you really think some stranger is going to take a chance on me?
Don't let him get in your head.
He's already there. With those words, the tears escaped, much to my frustration. I swiped at them angrily. Cooper pulled me into a hug.
Don't cry. I hate it when you cry. It makes me want to beat people up.
I'll be fine.
I know you will be. And you'll figure out a way to prove him wrong.
Cooper's hand went up and down my back, and I melted further against him. As comforting as Cooper's words were, I wasn't sure I would figure out a way to prove Mr. Wallace wrong. I wasn't great at changing people's feelings. 6. I stared at the blank canvas. Experience. Depth. Cooper was right. I needed to prove Mr. Wallace wrong. I'd get in that art show, get accepted to the program, and prove to Mr. Wallace, to Cooper, to everyone, that I was a real artist. I'd paint something new, something different. He wasn't making final decisions on the applications until 2 weeks before the show. I'd show him that I was more than what he'd seen. I had about 4 weeks to paint 5 paintings better than I'd ever painted before. The time wasn't what was causing a growing panic in my chest, though. I had time. Depending on the size, how detailed it was, how many continuous hours I could devote to the piece, I spent anywhere from a day to several days on a painting. Since it was summer, I had nothing but time. The tightness filling up my chest was due to the fact that I had no idea what I was going to paint. I had no idea what would be new or different or better. I flipped through my scrapbook of inspirational photos and prints, which normally gave me ideas. But nothing was coming to me. And wasn't the point to do something different than I normally did? I shoved the scrapbook back in the hutch and dropped my paintbrush into the jar. I turned to leave the room and let out a scream when I saw my mom standing in the doorway behind me.
"You scared me," I said.
"You didn't paint anything."
"I know."
Cooper told me what Mr. Wallace said.
"What? That traitor. When did he tell you that?"
"He texted me this morning."
"I will kill him."
"What I want to know is why you didn't tell me."
"I don't know. The more times I say it out loud, the more I believe it. I wasn't even going to tell Cooper. He forced it out of me."
She shook her head. "That boy doesn't have to force anything out of you."
"I know," I told him without much effort. "I have no willpower when it comes to him."
"Keep that to yourself." She smiled. My mom knew about my history with Cooper. She was the one I cried to last summer after that fateful late-night walk on the beach where I told him how I felt, and he laughed it off. I brushed by her and out to the living room, where Grandpa was sleeping in the recliner. I sat on the couch, thinking my mom wouldn't try to talk to me in here with Grandpa napping. I should have known better. She sat next to me.
"I think your paintings are beautiful."
Grandpa snorted awake.
"I wasn't sleeping,"
he said. "It's okay, Gramps. When a man gets to be your age, he can't help it."
"Would you punish your daughter for me?"
he said. My mom laughed. "We're talking about Mr. Wallace."
"No depth, huh?"
Grandpa said.
"You told him?"
I threw my hands in the air.
"I'm not allowed to know?"
Grandpa asked, indignant.
"Since when am I not allowed to know?"
"Since I have no heart," I said. Mom patted my shoulder.
"You have a heart, baby. It's your art Mr. Wallace is referring to."
"So you agree with him?"
"I never said that. You know your father and I love what you do."
"Wait,
Did you tell Dad? He doesn't need to worry about this right now. He likes to be kept up to date, too. I sighed. I need to start waking up earlier. My mom gestured to the paintings hung around the living room. They were like windows that let in no light, but made the room seem endless. Each one was a different scene of the outside world. I'd painted busy places like Times Square and the Strip in Vegas, but also serene places, like countryside villas in France and green-covered bluffs in Ireland. Not that I'd ever been to any of those places, but I'd seen a lot of pictures. I'd painted these one by one since our move here, thinking they could inspire my mom to see more of the world. But I wasn't really sure they helped. Maybe they actually made her feel like she didn't need to go anywhere, since she had the whole world in her living room. "Just look at how talented you are," she said. The paintings looked nearly real. But wasn't that Mr. Wallace's point? They weren't unique. They weren't my own. They were based off pictures. But what did I feel when I looked at them? I just thought they looked like nice places to visit. I couldn't feel the wind on my face or taste the air. Is that what was supposed to happen when looking at really good art? Maybe Mr. Wallace was right, but maybe there was something I could do about it. I need experience. "You've been painting for as long as I can remember," Mom said. "No, I mean experiences. What experiences will help me find depth? Find my heart. I needed to find inspiration from life, not from pictures. And not just inspiration, but emotion, too." "I think you have a perfect heart," Mom said. I rolled my eyes. "You're my mom. You have to say that. I'm being serious. I need to do something. Lots of somethings, apparently. But what?"
"What kind of qualities are you looking to develop?" Grandpa asked.
I thought about that as I tapped my finger over and over again on the arm of the couch. My gaze drifted to my grandpa, one of my favorite people in the world. What were my favorite qualities about him? "Courage, like you," I decided.
"Me?"
Grandpa asked. "Yes, you say what you're feeling no matter what the people around you think. You know how to stand your ground. How did you learn that?"
"A really mean drill sergeant in boot camp."
"So I should join the army? Follow in yours and Dad's footsteps?" He nodded.
"Sure. When you're 18, you should. It made me a man."
"You want me to join the army and become a man?" He let out a growl.
"Stop pretending to take me so literally."
"You're not joining the army, Abby," Mom said. Grandpa was saying that he gained courage by standing up to someone even when it was hard. "Right. I have no idea how to do that."
"You'll figure it out," Grandpa said.
"What else?" Mom asked. "What other traits do you admire?" "I like how you know something about everything, Mom." She laughed.
"I'm pretty sure you hate that."
"Well, I'm not a fan of the brown recluse stories."
"She means she's not a fan of your paranoid reading,"
Grandpa said. I swatted my hand through the air in his direction. "That's not what I said." My mom patted my leg.
"Well, whatever the case, reading is right. I'd say that books can give you a new perspective on things. I know you already read, so may I suggest reading something out of your comfort zone? Like a classic?"
"Hold on." I jumped up. "Let me go get paper. I need to write these down." I went to the junk drawer in the kitchen and found a pen, then plucked a piece of paper from the printer on the counter. I grabbed a magazine off the coffee table and sat back down, positioning the paper on top of the magazine. At the top of the page, I wrote, "The Heart List," and underlined it 2 times. "Okay, so stand up to someone and read a really old book." Mom rolled her eyes, but didn't protest.
"What other traits are important to you?"
Dad is always somewhere new and doing something different. I think that made him who he is. The kind of person who is flexible and adventurous.
So, try something new?
My grandpa said. And he doesn't mean drugs, Mom added. Because that was the first thing I thought of.
Try more than one new thing. Make it five. Try five things you've never done before,
Grandpa said. Five? What do you think I am? A newly minted person? Five is a lot. Are there five things I haven't tried? My mom rolled her eyes. Please, there are 100 things you haven't done. Okay, fine. You're right. I wrote it down. 3 things were on my list. That wasn't enough. If I had to drastically change the way I saw the world, which would hopefully change the way I painted, I needed more experiences. I thought of my friends and things I admired in them. Rachel is kind to everyone. I think everyone likes her. What experience could I possibly have that will grant me that quality? What about learning a stranger's story? Mom said. What do you mean? Just walk up to a random person and ask what their deal is? No. Care enough about something you see someone do to want to know more about that person. To let what you hear change you in some way. So, learn a story. I added that to my list. What else? My pen was poised, eager to soak up their wisdom, which I was sure was going to transform me into the best painter in the universe by the time the deadline for the showcase came around.
You tell us, Grandpa said.
My friend Justin is on a service mission in South America right now. I bet that experience will give him more depth than anything I could dream up. Grandpa grunted.
You don't have to go to South America to do service. There's plenty here.
Like what? I have complete faith that you'll find something, Mom said. I added service to my list, with Justin's name next to it. Then I added names next to the other items on the list they had inspired. I had Grandpa, Mom, Dad, Rachel, Justin. Cooper, I said aloud.
What about him?
I don't have a Cooper-inspired experience.
What do you like best about Cooper?
Mom asked. I closed my eyes for a moment. What didn't I like about him? Every laugh and story we shared raced through my mind. I stopped myself from saying everything. He's fearless. Nothing scares him. Maybe I need to overcome some of my fears.
How?
Grandpa asked. By facing one. I don't like the sound of that one, Mom said. Nothing dangerous.
It's a good one,
Grandpa said, as I wrote it down.
How about quit a bad habit?
Grandpa said.
That's always character building.
I don't drink or smoke, Gramps.
Are those the only bad habits in the world? What about that horrible sarcasm of yours? That would be a good one to nip in the bud.
Nobody says nip in the bud, and I'll quit being sarcastic once you do. He curled his lip.
Or you can pick another thing.
That's what I thought. I added quit a bad habit to my list.
If you're looking for character building, you should add fall in love to your list,
my mom said. As I wrote it down, Grandpa asked,
Didn't she already do that one?
I gasped. Did you tell him? Mom narrowed her eyes at Grandpa, and I rolled mine. So I guess I can check that one off.
Fall in love with someone who loves you back, she said.
Ouch. Now you're just being mean. She patted my leg.
It will change you.
Okay, so I'm going to add have my heart broken to the list. Because I can already check that one off.
Are you looking for things you can already cross off?
Mom asked. No. But I wrote it anyway and put a tiny check next to it with a smile. My mom let out a breathy laugh.
How about see a life come into the world?
You're getting weird now, You want me to case hospitals? And by the way, gross.
That sentence can be interpreted in many ways, and I definitely didn't mean follow pregnant women.
Okay, I'll write it.
But I don't know how that can be interpreted in more ways than the obvious one.
How about,
my grandpa said, with a dramatic pause,
see a life go out of the world.
And that is the end of my list. When you people start talking about death, I'm done.
It changes you, child.
I don't want to see that, even if it does make me a deeper person.
Understandable.
Besides, I felt like I could already put a check mark next to that one, too. I hadn't exactly seen my grandma die, but I felt like I saw the heartache it had caused often enough. I wrote it down, but didn't add the check mark. Maybe there was another way to interpret that one as well. I hoped this worked, because if it didn't, maybe I really wasn't an artist. And if I wasn't an artist, what was I? 7. I read, then reread the list I'd made the day before. I hoped that the best traits of the people in my life cobbled together into this list would turn me into a Frankenstein's monster version of the lot of them. The non-freakish version. There were 11 things on the list. Well, technically 10 if I didn't count the one I'd already checked off. How to become deep in 10 steps. Or less? I hoped it would be less. Maybe this was why the Art Institute Winter Program asked for sales history, because they knew how hard it was to make it past the gatekeepers of galleries. That could narrow down their list of applicants dramatically. I fished a pushpin out of the container on my desk and found a spare bit of wall space between a quote about love and a picture of a dandelion, all its seeds but one floating away on the wind. I'd pinned all sorts of inspiration on my wall. Art, quotes, poems, scenery over the years, muses for my painting. It was all things I'd seen while flipping through magazines or scrolling through my phone. Some I added to my scrapbook, some to my walls. I laughed a little as I turned a circle, taking in everything now. They were all things that had made me feel something, I realized. It's why I'd pinned them there. Oh, the irony that my paintings weren't doing the same thing for someone else. I snapped a picture of the list with my phone, and out of habit, was about to send a group text to Rachel, Justin, and Cooper, when I remembered Rachel wouldn't get it, and Justin was in the middle of being philanthropic. He didn't need to see my attempt at depth right now. Instead, I emailed the picture to myself, then sat down at my laptop to compose a letter to my dad. Hey, Pops. Attached you will find a list of activities that will make me so full of heart, you might not recognize me when you get home. And since you're always gone so long that I forget who you are, we'll be in the same boat this time. You're welcome. Also, I figured out what I want you to bring me home this time. I want a small rock shaped like a heart. You should scour the desert to find it. It's the only way I will know you truly love me and think about me every day. Plus, it will represent my heart growing 3 sizes. Is that how many sizes the Grinches grew? I forget. Remember when we used to watch that every Christmas and you said that you almost named me Cindy Lou Who? I'm still eternally grateful you didn't. Even though I now know that's not a true story. Love, your appropriately named daughter. I picked up the little vial of sand I kept on my desk that Dad had brought me home after I requested it during his last tour. He always brought me home something. Sometimes it was something I asked for. Sometimes it was something he said reminded him of me, like painted beads or glass art. I turned the bottle sideways, letting the sand move along the vial as I tipped it back and forth. There was a knock on my door, followed by Cooper's voice.
Are you presentable?
I set the small bottle down, hit send on my email, and shut the laptop.
Presentable? Do you mean decent?
Same thing.
Well, one of those things I am, and one I'm not, so I don't think they are the same thing. He let out his overly dramatic sigh,
which I could hear through the closed door.
"Do you have clothes on, Abby?"
"Yes." He opened the door and flung himself into my room, landing on his stomach on my bed, then rolling onto his side.
"Hi."
His eyes narrowed in on the list I'd pinned to my wall.
"What's that?"
"My 10-step guide to a deeper life."
"It only takes 10 steps? Maybe I should do it then."
"You totally should. These can be our summer activities." He scooted off the bed and came to stand next to me, looking over the list. He smelled good, like vanilla and oranges. That was his usual scent. But sometimes he smelled like sweat and fabric softener, and sometimes he smelled like toothpaste and face wash, or cherry chapstick and sunblock, or chocolate, or... "Stop," I told myself. Not helpful at all.
"I'm not going to watch a baby being born," he said.
"Right. The list." I turned my attention back to it. "That's what I said. But my mom said there were other ways to interpret life coming into the world, or something like that."
"I can only think of one way to watch life come into the world."
"Same. But whatever. We don't have to do all of them. I sense depth will occur after 5. He laughed.
"Good. Because I also don't want to have to kill anyone."
I smiled. I don't think that's what Grandpa was suggesting with that one.
"I have your number 6.
"You do?" I glanced at the list to remember what number 6 was. Face of fear. Of course he picked that one.
"Why is my name next to it?"
he asked. "Because certain ones were inspired by certain people." I pointed at his. "You, my fearless friend, inspired that one. And you don't get to pick my fear. I'm picking my own for that."
"Come on. You'll give yourself an easy one."
"And you'll give me an impossible one."
"Everything is possible."
I stared at him expectantly.
"What?"
he asked. "Are you going to finish that thought? Everything is possible..."
"That's all I was going to say. Is there supposed to be more?"
"There's always more with that start. Everything is possible through hard work, or through perseverance, or through never giving up, or through God."
"Huh, okay. Everything is possible when you're with me."
I rolled my eyes. I liked my options better.
"Well, right now, my option fits, because you're going to face your fear with me."
What have I gotten myself into? He laughed evilly as we left the room. He held out a red helmet for me. "No, absolutely not. I told you I was just going to watch. This is your thing." Over his shoulder, I could see the other quads and dune buggies zooming through the dunes. The sun beat down on the sand and made everything in the distance appear wavy, adding to the nausea I already felt at the thought of being out there with them.
"A fear is not going to be something that's your thing. Then it wouldn't be your fear."
"I'm not scared of this. I just think it's stupid and dangerous."
"You are terrified of this. I can see it in your eyes. Don't try to pretend this isn't one of your fears. And if it's not your fear, you can put one check mark in the trying something new box."
I huffed and took the helmet from him. "Fine. It is my fear. I'd seen too many crashes while he was racing, and I did not want that to be me." He smiled big and started walking to where his quad was waiting by the trailer. One of his buddies passed, obviously just finishing his run, and said,
"Be careful out there. It was really windy last night."
"Thanks," Cooper said, and when we were out of hearing distance added,
"For nothing."
"We can't go now," I said, walking faster to try to catch up with him. "I know what wind means on the dunes. I've been out here with you enough. It means there's 100-foot drops carved into the sand. It means we hit them at the top of a hill out of nowhere and we go plummeting."
"Don't listen to him. We'll be fine. I was born on the dunes, remember?"
He threw over his shoulder. "And now you're going to die on them, and I'll be able to check off the last item on the list." He stopped suddenly,
me nearly running into him, and turned around. He put his helmet on the sand between his feet, then stood and placed his forearms on my shoulders, looking me in the eyes.
I know you can do this. I know you'll be safe. But if you don't want to, you don't have to.
And that was it. I was toast. Was it possible he knew what his proximity and those eyes and that voice did to me? Even if he didn't, I knew my weakness. That tiny voice inside my head that was saying, "Look at him. He wants you to do this. Maybe this will make him fall for you." But being aware of my weakness and resisting it were two totally different things. Ugh, I thought I was more over him than this. I nodded. "I'll try."
"Yeah?"
he said, his sparkling smile back. I took a fistful of the front of his t-shirt. "Yes. But after this, you will buy me a milkshake."
"Only if you don't barf,"
he said, taking a step out of my hold, swiping up his helmet, and finishing the walk to his quad. "Wait, what?" He took the helmet I still held and popped it onto my head. "Ow!" My voice was muffled inside the only thing now protecting me from a cracked skull. He lifted up the visor.
"What?"
"Nothing. Let's get this over with." My stomach was already in knots, and I realized that maybe he was right. Maybe I wouldn't want a milkshake after this, because I was certainly going to barf. He hopped on the quad and powered it to life. Then he turned and patted the seat behind him. I lowered my visor and climbed on. He took my arms and wrapped them around his waist.
"Hold on tight, okay?"
I nodded. He hadn't needed to tell me that. Then he put his own helmet on, and we were off. I should have gone on my own. If he taught me how to use the quad, it would have been better. I would have gone slow and taken it easy, and life would have been better. But I wasn't on my own. I was behind Cooper, the guy who was in frequent dune races. The guy who was born on the dunes. And he wasn't taking it easy. Acid crept up my throat. The landscape ahead was terrifying. The sand was pocked with bowls carved into its otherwise smooth surface. Some of those bowls were shallow and harmless, but the ones Cooper liked to take on were 30-foot drops that we had to race down the side of, into the hole. Those were the kind that needed a momentum to come out of, so he took them at speeds that had me gripping him even tighter. I might have enjoyed this setup if I wasn't so terrified. "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you," I said as he revved the engine to make us go even faster. He couldn't hear me, but those words echoing through my helmet made me feel better. On the bright side, this wasn't a feeling I purposefully had very often. I couldn't remember the last time I'd felt this amount of sheer panic. Or this amount of hatred toward Cooper. So maybe this would help me paint emotion. Cooper skidded to a stop at the top of a hill. Our two right tires were on the edge of a sandy cliff. One more pump of the gas, and we would have been flying down the 80-foot drop. Had I not been here, he probably would have taken that drop, happy and hoping not to somersault down it. He turned on the quad to talk to me.
"Are you having fun yet?"
he yelled. I shook my head back and forth, unable to open my mouth for fear I'd be sick.
"Really? I thought for sure you'd like it once you tried it."
I shook my head again.
"Okay, I guess we head in then."
I nodded. And he was back at it just as fast as before. When we arrived at his trailer, I stumbled off the quad and tripped to the ground on wobbly legs. He took off his helmet and sat down in the sand next to me.
"So, you are actually a wimp. I had been kidding when I called you that in front of Amelia, but now I know."
I threw a handful of sand at him, then shakily took off my helmet.
I might have liked it better had I driven.
You want to drive?
He swung his keys in front of my face. I held up my hands. No!
So, what do you think?
He pointed out at the stretch of sand we'd just made our mark on.
Is this list of yours going to accomplish anything?
I thought about the fear that gripped my chest out there, that clawed at my insides in a way I'd never felt before. And now it was gone. I faced that feeling and overcome it. A surge of pride expanded my insides. Yeah, maybe. I looked back up at him. A teasing smile lit his eyes. He needed to feel the same thing I'd just felt. That mocking smile would be wiped off his face real fast. I had told my grandpa and mom that Cooper was fearless, and that seemed to be the case. But I was probably wrong. Everyone was afraid of something. You're next. What are you afraid of? He held his helmet in the air.
I fear nothing, Abby.
No, really. You said you wanted to do the list with me. What fear are you going to face? He tossed the keys to his quad once, then caught them.
Huh. I really can't come up with anything. I'll think about it.
I handed him back the helmet. So will I. 8. My legs are sore, I said. Why are my legs sore? We were on that quad for 30 minutes. I held the milkshake Cooper had bought me as a reward as we walked down Main Street toward his car.
You were gripping the seat with your thighs like your life depended on it. Of course they're sore.
My life did depend on it. I hit my right thigh 3 times with a closed fist. Ouch! That seriously hurts.
Then stop doing that.
And stop walking like that. Like what?
Like you just spent hours on a horse.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. I can't help it. I hit my thigh again. He stepped in front of me, presented his back, and squatted.
Jump on.
I will, because maybe carrying me 100 yards will make your leg sore. I jumped onto his back and rested my chin on his shoulder. This wasn't exactly helping my sore legs or the feelings I was crushing down. Main Street was mostly tourist shops. Kites, beach trinkets, surf gear. But Cooper still looked in each window we passed, like he might actually buy any of those things. I caught sight of a sign on a post and said, "Wait, stop."
"Why?"
"There." I pointed to the sign. "Read that." He walked closer. The sign was taped up to the silver light post, and Cooper read aloud the words on it.
"Come audition for the community theater summer musical, The Music Man."
Cooper hitched me up farther on his back and started to walk away.
"Nope. Pass."
I pulled on his shoulders, like I really was riding a horse now, and he would back up with my command. When he didn't, I kicked free of his grip and hopped off his back. "Cooper, the tryouts are in 3 days. I pointed at the date on the sign. "That is exactly when I need to complete another experience by. This is fate. Neither of us has ever tried out for a play before. It's perfect."
"Fate?"
"Yes, fate. Destiny. We happen to be walking by a sign. We happen to be working on a list. This is happening." I took a picture of the info with my phone. He threw his head back and groaned.
"I miss Justin. He wouldn't make me do crap like this."
"Yes, we should let Justin know what he's missing out on." I texted Justin the pic I'd just taken with the words, "Cooper begged me to try out with him."
"You are such a punk," Cooper said.
"Are you scared?" I asked. "Is this your fear?"
"No, I just don't understand the point. We won't make it. We are both horrible singers."
"Hey, speak for yourself."
"You think we'll make it?"
"No, but it's not about making it. It's about the experience." "That's the point, Coop." I hooked my arm in his elbow.
This will be so much fun.
That's one word for it.
My phone buzzed with a text. Justin had written back.
I don't want to know. See? He thinks it's crazy, too.
I will see you at my house Monday morning at 10 a.m. That's not tomorrow or the next day, but the day after that.
I know what day Monday is.
Just checking. It's summer. I know how days blend together.
What about tomorrow?
He asked. Tryouts aren't tomorrow.
I know, but I'll probably see you tomorrow.
I have to work in the morning. After that?
Sure. First day back since Mr. Wallace told you you're an android?
Yep.
Good luck.
I collapsed into my desk chair after work. It had been a weird day. Mr. Wallace posted me at the ticket desk. I never worked the ticket desk. Even though cleaning and directing visitors seemed like a worse job, it put me right in the middle of inspiring art. Today I got to stare at the lobby and the street for 4 hours. There was nothing inspiring about that. I sensed Mr. Wallace was trying to avoid me. I signed into my computer and pulled up my email. The time difference between Dad and me usually meant that he wrote me when I was sleeping. Sure enough, I had an email waiting.
To my daughter, whose mother named her and didn't ask for my vote. Your heart does not need to grow 3 sizes. 1, maybe, but definitely not 3. May I suggest you take the following items off your list for the proper amount of heart growth? Face a fear. That sounds dangerous, and I don't support it. Fall in love. You're not allowed to do that until you're 30. Have your heart broken. This seems counterproductive, seeing as you're trying to grow it. Learn a stranger's story. Don't talk to strangers. See a life go out of the world. I've seen enough of that for our whole family. That should do it. That leaves 6 on your list. You're welcome. As for the impossible request you have tasked me with, we shall see if rocks exist in the shape of hearts. Thanks for keeping me updated. How is your mother? Love, that guy you won't recognize when he gets home.
My dad was the best email writer. And considering that's how we communicated a lot of the time, it was a good quality to have. I typed him a reply. To the most overprotective dad in the world. Thanks for your input, but you don't get a vote on the list. In fact, I've already done one you vetoed. I faced a fear yesterday. I rode on a quad for the first time. It was not something I will do again for a while, but it was definitely an experience. And I can guarantee that heart-shaped rocks exist. We'll see if you are dedicated enough to find one. Mom is doing okay. Not as good as when you're here, but nothing to worry about. Stay safe. Love you. Insert the name you would have voted for here. I pushed send, then looked up at the list on my wall and grabbed a pen from the desk drawer. I put a small check mark next to Face a Fear. Could I also count the quad ride as trying something new? No. One experience could only equal one check mark, I decided. No combining. I really wanted this to work. New experiences would give me new images and emotions to draw from for my art. I usually painted what I knew, what I'd seen in my life or in pictures. I didn't rely on emotion or pushing myself to feel or see or try new things. I surveyed the rest of the list. Aside from the tryouts in a couple of days, I wasn't sure what I'd do for the rest. There was one, however, that was simple. One I could start now that would take me at least a couple of days to complete. Read a classic. Mom, I announced when I arrived in the kitchen. I'm going to the library. She looked up from a book she was reading titled True Crime. Not good reading material for my already overly worried mom. Any input on which classic I should pick? I asked. Grandpa called from the other room.
I've read a lot of classics. Do you want my input?
Nobody is talking to you, old man. Keep watching your Matlock. I heard an exasperated grunt.
I don't watch Matlock.
My mom gave me her disappointed look, the one that said I had taken my joking with her dad one step too far. I'm sorry for calling you an old man, I yelled.
And what about the Matlock thing?
There's no shame in watching a show about an old man lawyer who always manages to save the day. There's something to be said about characters you can relate to. My grandpa had been a lawyer before he retired, and he hated being compared to TV lawyers. He said something I couldn't understand, probably mumbling some silent curse.
There are too many classics for me to limit your choice.
She pointed to the living room.
And you burned any bridge you had there. Looks like you're on your own.
Do we have a library card? We need a library card. Do you need to fill out a form for me since I'm a minor and all? They probably don't trust me with their books. My attempt to get her away from that book and out of the house was beyond transparent, but I didn't care. Mom's brow immediately went down, and I could tell she was trying to reason through that, hope for some other solution than her needing to go to the library with me. I don't think they need me there. Kids have library cards, right? I don't need to go.
There's not very many people in the library, Mom.
You don't know that. Plus, it's only 5 minutes away, I said.
By car?
Yes, by car.
I'd rather walk.
I know, but that's a long walk. One I knew she couldn't make. It's fine, Mom. It's just been a while since you pushed yourself a little. I usually didn't say things like this to my mom. I usually let her off the hook easier. I didn't want to upset her or make her more anxious about life. But maybe clinging to Cooper on the back of that quad the day before made me realize that pushing yourself to do hard things was actually pretty liberating. There was a sense of accomplishment about it, after the fact. She sighed. I'll call the library and see if they need me there for you to get a card. Blasted phones, I thought. Always ruining my best laid plans with their usefulness. I pulled out my useful phone and sent Cooper a text. I'm going to the library to pick out a classic. You want to come?
Can't. Family BBQ at my dad's work. Call me with an emergency in about an hour.
What kind of emergency?
The best friend kind. I don't know. You'll think of something.
I'm sure your parents will love me even more for that. I'm not faking an emergency. I'll be reading Crime and Punishment. I had looked up a list of classics, and that one sounded the most interesting to me.
What crime are you planning to commit?
That's the title of the book.
Cool. Get me that one, too. It sounds awesome.
We can't read the same classic. We need to read different ones and then tell each other about them. It will be double the depth.
Okay. I call dibs on Crime and Punishment.
You are a brat.
This is true. I have to go now.
Okay, have fun. He added.
Call me in 1 hour.
No. I put my phone in my pocket and looked up just in time to see my mom come back into the kitchen. Good news, she said. You can sign for your own library card. Oh, okay. Don't look so disappointed, hun. I'll walk to the park with you after dinner tomorrow. How about that? Promise? She hesitated a moment, then nodded resolutely.
Yes.
I'm holding you to that.
I heard it too,
Grandpa said from the other room. I'm being ganged up on now? She asked. Not ganged up on, Mom. Supported. You have lots of support. She smiled and hugged me, then handed me a bottle of antibacterial hand gel. What is this?
Do you know how many people touch those books?
I handed her back the gel. You should read some stories on this stuff. It's creating superbugs.
Really?
I shouldn't have said that. Now she'd spend the next 2 days on the computer reading about superbugs. I snatched the bottle back. You're right. I'll bring this. I lifted the car keys from a hook by the door and left, before she decided I couldn't leave the house after all.
9. There were lots of books considered classics, a whole section of them. Some I'd never heard of before, like Ulysses or Middlemarch. Some I had, like The Scarlet Letter and The Sun Also Rises. A lot of them were on the list I had looked up, but a lot of them weren't. I'd already found Crime and Punishment and was reaching for Frankenstein, thinking it reminded me of the mashup of qualities that had inspired my list, when someone else reached for it at the same time. "Sorry," we both said, then laughed. The girl smiled and gestured for me to take it. I recognized her immediately. She had curly red hair and bright green eyes.
"Oh, you're the
Zit commercial girl?" she finished for me when I stopped myself in time. "Yes." She gestured to her beautifully clear skin.
"Keeps them gone for weeks."
"Do you really use that Zit cream?"
"No." I smiled.
"You go to my school too, right?"
"Pacific High?" "Yes." "I'm Abby, by the way."
"Oh, sorry. I'm Lacey."
She nodded toward the book I'd reached for.
"Are you getting a jump start on the Honors English summer reading list? Do you have Engel?"
"No, I'm not taking Honors English. I'm just looking for an interesting classic to read."
"Why?"
"For fun, I guess." I didn't want to explain the Heartless to her. "You can take that one. I'll find a different one."
"What kind of stories do you like to read? Maybe I can help you pick one."
"Have you read a lot of classics?" I asked.
"I've done a lot of theater, so I've read almost all of Shakespeare. Other than that, not really. I'm not sure why I offered like I was some expert."
"If you say anything with enough confidence, it's true, right?"
"I can get behind that."
She pulled the book down.
"There's always the summaries on the backs. Those are sort of helpful."
She began reading the back of the book she held in an English accent. "Is the writer of that one British?" I asked.
"I just assume all the writers of classic literature are British."
She shrugged.
"But more importantly, I do a killer British accent."
"You really do?"
"Wow, that sounded vain. I promise I'm not vain." She bit her lip. "Is that the kind of promise vain people make?"
I let out a single laugh and held out my hand for the book. "I have to get that book now." She handed it to me. "A Tale of Two Cities by Dickens," I read off the cover.
"Aha,"
she patted the book.
"See, it was a safe bet."
My phone buzzed in my pocket.
"Save me."
It was a text from Cooper. I tucked the two books I now had, one for me, one for Cooper, under my arm and typed back, "Just tell your parents you want to leave their party."
"Can't. They'll be disappointed. You've seen their disappointed faces."
"You need to go into the army. I hear it makes you a man." Lacey slid Frankenstein off the shelf and waved at me with it.
"It was nice to meet you. I hope you enjoy A Tale of Two Cities."
"Thanks." I pointed to her book. "You too." She walked away, and I dialed Cooper's number. He answered.
"Hello?"
I ran out of gas.
"Abby, why would you do a thing like that? Don't you pay attention to your gas gauge? It's that little one right above the steering wheel."
"Watch it, or I'll hang up right now." He laughed.
"Of course I'll come save you, even though I'm right in the middle of my dad's really cool work party. You should see it. They have live singers and everything."
"Sounds amazing."
"What's this group called again, Dad?"
A deep voice said something I couldn't understand.
"The Patriotic Quartet. There's four of them, and they walk around the party only singing patriotic songs."
"I would have never guessed that by their name," I said, heading for the checkout. A few people shot me looks on my way, and I guessed I was being too loud for the library.
"I know."
"And it's not even the 4th of July," I said, quieter this time.
"Barely 2 weeks. Imagine how booked they are for that day."
Would you rather have to listen to only quartets for the rest of your life, or screeching cats?
That's a hard one. But quartets, I think. Unless they can only sing patriotic songs, then the cats.
I'm getting our books now. Are you going to come rescue me and my empty gas tank or not?
Abby ran out of gas,
Cooper's muffled voice said. He was obviously relaying the message to his dad.
I have her on the phone and can ask her exactly where she is. Otherwise, we have the Find Your Friend app on each other's phones.
His dad must have asked what that was because he said,
It's like a GPS thing that lets me track her phone. What? Yes, it's safe. You don't let strangers track you, just your friends.
Back to me, he said.
My dad doesn't know what Find Your Friend is.
I figured.
I'll be right there.
My hero, I said dryly.
See you in a bit.
I'll be back at my house. No need to use the app.
Copy.
I hung up and handed my books to the librarian. These are due in 2 weeks, she said with a smile. Thanks. She used a wand to scan the barcode on the covers.
These are character-building books. They'll make you think.
That's what I'm hoping for. I hoped they built character fast, because it felt like the clock was ticking. 10. The next day, Cooper and I sat in my room reading our books.
Was work any better today?
Cooper was lying on the floor. He'd rested Crime and Punishment on his chest and had his hands grasped behind his head. He looked so at ease in my room that it seemed like he should be a permanent fixture there. From up on my bed, I responded, Nope. Ticket counter again. Tina got the floor. Tina doesn't even like the floor.
Stupid Tina.
I know. I sighed and turned the page of my book. Cooper was silent for several long moments, then asked,
Would you rather have to read only that book for the rest of your life, or only be able to watch one movie for the rest of your life?
That's hard. I love movies, but I can't imagine never being able to pick up another book either.
I know.
I don't think I can give up movies. I'm visual, I said.
I don't think I can either.
He held up his book.
You want to switch?
Switch? I'm on chapter 6. We'd started reading the day before, after he'd rescued me. And I was actually enjoying Charles Dickens. The language was hard to get into at first, but I felt like I was starting to understand. It was an interesting story that brought to life some of the things we'd studied in world history about the French Revolution.
Let's summarize what we've read so far, and then switch for the next hour. Double the depth, right?
I laughed. Okay. I frisbeed the book to him. Oh, I forgot to tell you. I ran into Lacey Barnes at the library yesterday.
Zit Cream Girl?
Yes.
I've never talked to her before. Does she really use that zit cream? Does it help?
He ran his hand over the side of his face, where he must have had a blemish. I couldn't see one. Cooper had nice skin, but, like me, broke out on occasion. She doesn't use it. She has perfect skin.
Figures,
he said.
What's she like?
Really nice, actually, and not vain at all.
What does that mean?
You don't know what vain means?
I know what vain means, but why did you bring it up?
Nothing. Inside joke.
You already have an inside joke with Lacey Barnes?
I almost said I had been kidding, but then realized. Yes, I do.
There you go, oozing your charm again, Abby.
I threw a pillow at him and he laughed, then tossed me his book. It landed next to me on the bed. He picked up the book I'd thrown him and reclined back. Wait, summary. We each summarized what we had read so far and then began reading from the books we now held. I wasn't sure how much time had passed when my mom knocked on the frame of my open door.
Have the classics swallowed you both whole, or would you like to eat dinner?
Cooper set his book aside and immediately stood.
Mrs. Turner, if you are offering food, I will eat it. It's the least I can do.
She beamed at him. I joined Cooper and we followed.